This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, and I'm standing at the U.S. border with Mexico near Douglas, Arizona. A crew of National Guards are here using a huge pneumatic hammer to drill four-foot holes into the limestone beneath us, one every 4 feet. Just over this hill, another crew is pouring concrete down into those holes and dropping in old railroad rails. This is a vehicle barricade. Closer to towns, they're building a wall with metal sheeting. And just in the brief time I've been here, I can see why. There's a group of about two dozen people, 300 yards or so, on the Mexican side of the border, waiting for their opportunity to cross. Even when it's finished, sometime this summer, they expect, this vehicle barrier here is not going to stop anybody from walking across the frontier. They would, though, face a very long walk through bleak, hilly landscape where there's nothing but rocks and scrub brush and otherworldly-looking ocotillo plants. This looks nothing like what I expected, which is why we're here. Immigration is a national issue, but people who live near the border have a different view. I'm actually speaking to you on a recording made yesterday afternoon. Now we go to Tucson, Arizona, for our special broadcast, Scenes from the Border. And I'm Neil Conan, broadcasting live from the Stevie Eller Dance Theater at the University of Arizona. And as you hear, thanks to member station KUAZ, here in Tucson we have a live audience with us. Illegal immigration is more than an abstract issue. In a way, we all live on the border, wherever we may be. So what is your experience with border crossers? How do they affect your life? Our number, as always, is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. And we're also going to be accepting talk with our members of our audience here in Tucson and with our guests. And we begin with Claudine LaMonaco. She's the immigration reporter for the Tucson Citizen. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Claudine, the president was in Yuma this past week and said that the still unfinished fence and that the stricter enforcement have begun to have an effect. Is he right?
Well, according to apprehensions from Border Patrol, they definitely have. Across the country, along the southwest border, apprehensions of illegal immigrants are down 30%. In the Tucson area, it's dropped a little less, down about 14%. And in Yuma, where the president spoke, it's down pretty dramatically, 68%. Of course, those numbers don't actually count how many people cross the border. We can never know that. Mm-hmm. These are just the people they catch. It's commonly assumed that the number that they catch is representative of the numbers of people who are crossing, mm-hmm. although it's clearly not scientific.
Just the day we were there yesterday, the Border Patrol seemed, in that spot, that day, seemed omnipresent. There were a lot of those green and white vehicles, those trucks that I guess have become pretty familiar down there. A lot of video cameras, observation posts. There was also an unmanned blimp that was, I suspect, wasn't flying because it was too windy, still moored at Fort Huachuca. And some people think that, you know, in a sense, that in a way it's all too much and at the same time not enough?
Well, if you talk to people who live by the border, you know, it's really impacting their lives, seriously. And so for them, they feel there was just an incident a couple of days ago where I got a call and a Border Patrol agent had shot a man's dog. And this is just a man who lives down by the border. Mm-hmm. So the people who are on the border, it really does impact their lives. I mean, the level of presence is up incredibly. On the other hand, this is, for example, just the Tohono O'odham Indian Reservation. It's the size of the state of, I believe, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. It's huge, vast territory we're talking about here. And so, you know, even though we can say, oh, apprehensions are down 14%, we're still talking, you know, thousands of people a day probably crossing. It's incredibly vast, barren terrain where you can still be out there, you know, and I'm sure we'll see it this summer. People lost for days without seeing anybody who eventually died. Mm-hmm. So,
and at the same time, seeing some of those isolated farmhouses down in that area, you could also understand why having strangers crossing your property at any hour of the day or night can be pretty scary.
Sure. I mean, you know, there are people I also hear about who, you know, they can hear this at night. There's a rancher woman that I know out in the Altar Valley who took to sleeping with a shotgun, you know, by her pillow.
So in a way, are people's views on immigration based on what their experience with immigration is?
Sure, definitely. I mean, there's also, you know, because they live it on such a daily basis, there's also, you know, also the economy down here depends on these people who are, you know, most of them crossing for work. And so it impacts their livelihoods.
We're going to hear all about many of those aspects throughout this program. And again, if you'd like to join us, give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email is talk@npr.org. And you can also join us on our blog of the Nation. That's also at npr.org. And let's go to Marissa. Marissa's with us from the microphone. I'm trying to tell which one. There in the middle. Go ahead, please.
Hi, my name's Marisa Werner. I'm from Tucson. I encounter migrants quite frequently in three ways. The first is that I'm a volunteer with Samaritans, which is a humanitarian aid organization. We patrol the desert, giving food, water, and medical aid to migrants. Mm-hmm. I'm also a physician working at a border area hospital where we treat many migrants. I also encounter many migrants on my commute to and from work. I'd like to speak today on behalf of an 11-year-old girl in pink sneakers who died in the desert in July last summer. Her name's Olivia. She died within walking distance of a church, a grocery store, and our hospital. I'd like everyone, when they think about what can be done about this border situation, to think of Olivia. She was trying to reunite with her parents when she was walking in the desert with her sister. When we think about border policy, I'd like us to think about the fact that Olivia wouldn't have died out there in the desert in the years before we had this increased border enforcement. I'd like us to think about what kind of wall is going to keep a child from wanting to be desperately with her parents, or a parent from wanting to provide in a good way for their children. And I've also seen from experience how humanitarian aid organizations and humanitarian aid in general can help prevent what happened to Olivia. I encourage everyone who lives in the border area to consider in what way they might be able to support and participate in humanitarian aid to migrants, especially as the summer approaches with the deadly high temperatures. I encourage those who own land or have jurisdiction over land in the border areas to contact humanitarian aid organizations such as Samaritans. And
Marisa, I don't mean to cut you off.
Yes.
Really, I can understand your story and your passion, and I can hear the emotion in your voice. But we're asking how this has affected your life. Clearly, it's affected you deeply. And as opposed to making a speech, I'd really like to hear how this. Do you understand the passions of people on the other side of this issue?
Oh yes, I do. I know that. In the place where I work, there's a long history of border hospitality, and the current situation is really stressing everybody out in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Thank you very much. We thank you very much for that. I'd like to turn now to one of our other guests here with us in Tucson. Agent Kelly Kirby is supervisor at BORSTAR, which is the Search and Rescue Division of the Border Patrol, and he's with us here on the panel. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And I wonder, as you hear that description, is that a situation where search and rescue might have been of help?
Could have been. I'm unfamiliar with the story she was telling, but as close as the person was to actual, you know, facilities, roads, home, that's and a hospital. You know, the question is whether she could have made it or chose not to make it that distance.
Chose not to make it?
Yeah, it's not uncommon that for whatever reason, either what they've been told or for their just desperation of wanting to get into the country. We do have people that actually hide from us and when we're actually attempting to rescue them.
Mm-hmm. Because you're driving the same vehicles as the Border Patrol?
Generally, no. Our vehicles are marked differently. They are marked. Mm-hmm. They are the green and whites. They are marked with search and rescue. And our agents are uniformed differently also.
Yes.
Generally, it's just for what we've interviews we've conducted, it's from what the smugglers have told them. Smugglers have told them, basically that we're bad people and what we would do to them. Also, their experiences in their own country with any law enforcement problems they've had down there.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they just do not know. So out of fear, a lot of times they do hide from us.
Let me ask you just to follow on what Marisa was saying. What kind of interaction do you have with humanitarian organizations who do try to help people in that situation?
I haven't had any negative interactions. I see the Samaritan Patrol regularly out in the West Desert area. That I don't know if you visited the West Desert, but we see them out there. When we're responding as medical entity, when we're called to assist someone mm-hmm. as far as an EMT and anybody needs medical attention, we've actually responded to Samaritan Patrol and allowed them to give them, they sometimes give out care packages, water, food, snacks, that sort of thing, even up to the point when we come to treat these people.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Let me turn again to Claudine LaMonaco of the Tucson Citizen. We're hearing some of the emotion that goes on in this issue and the passion that goes on in this issue. There are people who feel just as strongly that aid should not be provided to these people.
There are. I mean, you're going to get a lot of passions on this issue. I find that generally the people who actually interact. I mean, for example, ranchers,
mm-hmm.
You also get a lot of compassion because they see, the men, women, and children crossing. But we're also home of the Minutemen. We're also home of a lot of groups who really don't have a lot of compassion for these folks.
We're going to have to take a short break now. We're in Tucson, Arizona, talking about life near the border, how it affects attitudes towards immigration. I'm Neil Conan. This is the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Neil Conan, broadcasting live today from the Stevie Eller Dance Theater at the University of Arizona and from member station KUAZ in Tucson. Illegal immigration is, of course, a national political issue here in southern Arizona near the border with Mexico. The view can be very different and more personal. We're talking with Claudine LaMonaco, an immigration reporter with the Tucson Citizen. Also with us is Agent Kelly Kirby, who works with BORSTAR, the search and rescue component of the Border Patrol. And, of course, we want to hear from you. What is your experience with border crossers? How does it affect your attitudes towards the issue of immigration? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And you can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. And why don't we get a caller on the line? And this is Eduardo. Eduardo calling us from Minneapolis.
Yeah, Neil, hi. This issue of the border affecting us all nationally impacts my family personally. I have parents who live on near the border, just about 30 minutes north of the border in New Mexico. And my parents are retired and live on a limited income. And if they could not cross into Mexico to purchase their medications, I fear for, I would imagine their health would really suffer greatly. So that's one point. The other point I want to make is that, when the administration passed this Congress passed this Homeland Security Act, the community that my parents live in received very little resources to help them with this issue of homeland security. And so fundamentally my point is that this issue impacts Americans directly, especially the poor with no insurance, no health insurance like my folks. And so I guess that was just the point I wanted to make is, I worry about them on the other side of the country, on the northern border, and it's just an issue that this country really needs to think seriously about in terms of why are these folks coming across the border, how is it impacting U.S.-born citizens that are Mexican by descent, and how poverty impacts both sides of the border.
Eduardo, the situation of immigration certainly has an impact there in Minneapolis, too, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. Our city has grown tremendously by recent influx of immigrants, not only from Mexico or Latin America, but from across the globe. The folks that are coming up here have traveled great distances, have risked quite a bit just to get across the border, and have very few resources just to make ends meet. So they fear deportation all the time. Recently, there was a INS raid in a west central town, I think yesterday, where they arrested several dozen, illegal immigrants. It affects us on the northern side of the country, on the other border, as well as those folks who live down in the southwest. Mm.
Eduardo, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. I wanted to go back to you, Claudine LaMonaco. Yes, the vast majority of people coming across the border are people, honest folk, looking for work. There are a few people who are not so nice. There are drug runners. There are people who are the smugglers of these people. And there is a lot of violence that is visited upon them.
Oh, yeah. The level of violence is really frightening, and you also see incredible acts. I mean, Border Patrol will always say, these smugglers are ruthless. And until I experienced that, there was one case where there was a 15-year-old boy with his mother, and the mother fell sick, and the smuggler left them behind, and the mother eventually died. The boy was wandering the desert for days, finally found. When I learned the details of the case, I was stunned because they were a half an hour walking distance from a highway. That smuggler could have told the boy, walk one half hour in that direction and you'll get help for your mom. But the smuggler didn't, because if the boy had been found, then Border Patrol probably would have been alerted and maybe the whole group would have been found. So it is a really ruthless business. It's also a more than $1 billion business in Arizona. It's tremendous. And with drugs, we're also one of the main entry points for drug smugglers. So, and in the last couple of months, we've seen increasing levels of violence where you have border bandits who prey on the migrants and will have shot and killed migrants trying to kidnap them or thinking that it's a drug load. As the recent border sheriff said, it's out of control.
Mm-hmm. Agent Kelly Kirby, let me ask you, you're on the humanitarian side of the Border Patrol, but do you see is your prime function to be a law enforcement, or is your prime function to help people?
We wear two hats. excuse me. We're primarily law enforcement agents. We are agents for the Border Patrol. And we operate as such until we're called to respond as a medical or search and rescue entity.
Let's see if we can get another question here from the audience. Barry, is it the microphone?
I'm here.
There you are in the middle. Go ahead, please, Barry.
Yes, I live in Tubac, Arizona, about 25 miles north of the Mexican border. Had been a rather tranquil area. Tubac is sort of an artist retreat. Very pleasant place to live in. To get from the border to Tucson, you have to go through Tubac, through I-19. Now, as the agents know, what they hope to be a permanent border checkpoint has been put up in just north of Tubac. And what are the consequences for the people who live in the residential area? The consequences are that many illegals, in order to avoid being stopped at the checkpoint, will now walk through residential areas. Yesterday, I saw four walking through the area that I live in. I've had one person actually in my backyard changing. The other problem is that this, of course, pushes the drug smugglers into the residential areas. As I'm sure the border agents know, we've had shootings relating to drug smugglers near Tubac, Arizona. We see all these resources on I-19. I saw it this morning. My feeling is put these resources, they should be allocated to the border, not in the middle of residential areas. Many people in Tubac have great concerns about this. We've heard a little from the Border Patrol about this, but I don't think they are fully consonant or cognizant of the impact on our daily lives of what happens as a result of putting these checkpoints up that do not represent international borders. They represent residential areas, etc.
I'm not going to ask Agent Kirby to. I think making policy like that is above his pay grade, as I think the expression goes. But I am going to ask you, are you cognizant, are other members of the Border Patrol cognizant of the problems that people like Barry face?
Yes. I mean, anytime you have, you're going to have traffic that tries to bypass our checkpoints. And that's just the way it operates. They're attempting to avoid apprehension. The problems you mentioned about the drug smugglers and the shootings in the area, from my understanding of that, it was more related to that as a territorial war. Mm-hmm. And basically between two smuggling organizations more than it is anything else. As far as it being pushed into residential areas, the efforts to the checkpoint, if it's up constantly, they are attempting to make it a permanent checkpoint. If we don't have the checkpoints, then all of the traffic that he's discussing going into residential areas would be driving straight up the highway.
Mm. So this is sort of the idea of a layered defense, not just at the border,
exactly.
But further inland as well. Okay. Agent Kirby, thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Agent Kelly Kirby, who's with us from BorStar, the search and rescue component of the Border Patrol. I'd like to turn now to another guest, Dr. Bruce Parks, the medical examiner here in Pima County. He's with us here today as well. And thank you very much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
And Dr. Parks, I know you have a somewhat grim job here. When did you start to see a lot of deaths of border crossers?
Well, we really noticed a big change in 2000, whereas prior to that, the numbers were on an annual basis about 15 a year. And then in 2000, we had 45, and then it's gone up every year since.
And how do you identify them as border crossers as opposed to, say, smugglers or drug runners?
Well, we don't differentiate. We often don't know exactly what a person was doing and how they came to be there and why they were there. You may get some indication, but generally not as far as their intent. But we have a criteria that we use to identify the people as a border crosser. As you might expect, many of the people are in a state of decomposition, and it's impossible to recognize what they look like, so we have to use anthropologists to determine that's a person that seemed to have originated from south of the border.
Mm-hmm.
We use other means as well, going through all their personal effects and whatnot. But if they come in and die in transit and they appear to have come through illegally, and from the examination of the bones and whatnot, we categorize them, even if they don't have any identification on them.
We've seen the TV shows. I suspect there's some difference between what we see on CSI and what you're able to do, but I suspect there are some similarities, too. And one of the things that we have to notice is that this is all very expensive to do.
It's a fair amount of expense that goes into it. We have had to hire additional personnel for the office. We've had to bolster our refrigeration capacity. We have, at this point, still over 100 border crossers at our facility that we're in the process of either identifying, waiting for DNA testing,
mm-hmm.
different stages of that process.
And that all takes time and money.
Definitely.
And what does it do to your budget?
It's caused our budget to go up, and we've been able to use funds from other sources and not take it out directly out of our budget. For instance, the auxiliary refrigeration unit that we had was constructed from funds that didn't come directly out of our budget. But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In a way, you see these tragedies every day. I wonder how this affects you.
Well, you're right. By the nature of the work, This office and offices across the country see tragedy on a daily basis, people in car crashes, people in the wrong place at the wrong time, and the border crossers and their deaths coming into the country is just another example of that kind of tragic death.
Mm-hmm. I guess I have to ask you, you see those, traffic accidents every day. Do the border crossers, does this seem different to you?
Well, it's another type of tragedy, and we try not to dwell on the humanistic components of these deaths. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to do our job. They do have their own unique set of difficulties with trying to get them examined and get them identified. That's a lot different than, say, a traffic crash. Although I might add that a number of the border crossers die in traffic crashes too, and we include mm-hmm. those in our statistics.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking today with Claudine LaMonaco of the Tucson Citizen, and right now with Bruce Parks, the Pima County Medical Examiner. We're talking about scenes from the border from Tucson, Arizona. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we get another caller on the line. And this is, if I could hit the right button here. Luis, are you there?
Yes.
Luis is with us here. From Kansas City. Go ahead, please.
Hi, I'm actually a border crosser. I was smuggled into the United States when I was 5 years old, along with my brother and my sister. And I guess the way that this issue has affected me is that my whole life I have lived as an American. And As I have grown, I have noticed that there has been growing xenophobia against Mexican nationals, and that we actually contribute anything to an American society because of our cultural threat that we pose to American society, or the perceived threat. And all I can say is that this issue of distrust and dislike of immigrants has affected many people's lives and mine to a great degree. All I can say is that I'm glad that there are people who offer humanitarian aid to these people, that because there's a great need in this country for labor, if there would only be a way for migrants to be able to procure the legal means of doing it. But as long as there isn't a good situation in Mexico, they will continue to come over here looking for a better life, and that's what my mother did for us. And I'll take my response off air.
Okay, Luis. Thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it, and good luck to you. In terms of a response, I'm not sure there is a response. There's a lot of people in Luis's situation, Claudine LaMonaco, people who either were born here or, in his case, came here as young children and who are now worried about the prospect that they may have to be deported and go back to a country they know very little of.
Yeah, and actually the situation in Tucson, there is, you know, a sizable population here who's illegal and undocumented, because we've always had such strong connections. I mean, this was a part of Mexico not too long ago. A friend of mine says, you know, she's fifth generation Tucsonan, Latino Tucsonan, which means her great-grandfather went to bed one night and was a Mexican citizen, woke up the next morning and was, you know, illegal because the border changed. he actually became a U.S. citizen. But anyway, to make that point, but there are a lot of people who live in fear here, especially when anywhere you have a heavy Border Patrol presence, your life can get turned upside down because of a broken taillight. If especially with traffic stops, that's how here in Tucson a lot of the people who are undocumented get deported. I did a story last year where a woman got deported for a similar thing. Three children left, a 7-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 15-year-old. The 15-year-old dropped out of school to take care of her two little sisters. By the time I found them, they were having a garage sale, selling all of their belongings to try to raise money for a coyote to bring their mother back across the border. So, yeah, this has a big impact on people's lives.
And as at the same time, there are a lot of communities in the country where the police will not report illegals,
you know,
to the Border Patrol.
Yes, the Tucson police here walk a fine line. They say they won't if somebody calls to say somebody's breaking into my house. Their policy is not to ask for documentation of victims. But the traffic stop thing is really, it's very blurry. And I've talked to lawyers who tell their clients, do not get in a car. Do not get in a car as a driver, as a passenger. Take the bus. It's really come to that.
All right, we have to take another short break. And before we go, Dr. Parks, thank you very much for being with us today. We appreciate your contributions.
Thanks for having me.
Pima County Medical Examiner Bruce Parks was here with us in the Stevie Eller Dance Theater at the University of Arizona. We're going to continue to take more of your calls and more questions from here in the audience when we come back from a short break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, broadcasting live from the Stevie Eller Dance Theater at the University of Arizona and from member station KUAZ in Tucson. Here are the headlines from some of the other stories we're following at NPR News today. There have been two bombings in Baghdad. At least three Iraqi lawmakers were killed in a blast today in the parliament building inside the heavily fortified Green Zone. And a truck bomb partially destroyed an historic bridge over the Tigris River, killing at least eight people. And Turkey's military wants to retaliate against Kurdish rebels in northern Iraq following recent Kurdish attacks in southeastern Turkey. Such an action could put the U.S. military in the middle of a fight between two of its partners, the Turks and the Iraqi Kurds. You can hear details on those stories and, of course, much more later today on All Things Considered. Tomorrow it is Science Friday, and Ira Flatow will be here. Today we're talking about scenes from the border. We're broadcasting from Tucson, Arizona, to hear how views of immigration change with people's experience of the issue. And in a way, we're asking you to tell us your experience because the issue has become such a national issue that, in a way, we all live in border towns. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. With us here on the panel is Claudine LoMonaco, an immigration reporter for the Tucson Citizen. And let's get another question from the audience here in Tucson.
Hi, I'm Sarah Badgley, and I'm a student here at the University of Arizona, and I'm also from Yuma, Arizona, so we've kind of been inspired a little bit to have President Bush in our town twice in a year. And I think that we've heard a lot about the passion coming from the right side to keep the border secure and a lot of compassion coming about humanitarian aid, and I think it really brings up the idea that we really need to step forward with a comprehensive reform bill to allow us to secure our borders but have open gates to allow people like your caller Luis, who works here for a living and does a great job being an American,
mm-hmm.
and also helping people like Olivia cross the border safely, but also in a way that we can protect who does come in so we're not getting the suspected terrorists to come over, drug dealers, and that kind of stuff, that I think that a comprehensive reform is kind of what we're
looking for.
Yeah. In the middle to.
It sounds like a pretty complicated issue.
Yeah.
Fine line to walk, isn't it? Thanks very much for that. And let's turn now to Ed Curry, who's a chili farmer here in Pierce, Arizona. He's on the Chili Association board as well. He's with us on the panel. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Neil.
And I imagine chili farmers have a lot of harvesting to do with the apparent reduction of numbers of people coming across. Is it becoming more difficult to find workers?
Neil, it's affected our lives tremendously. Over the last several years, as this immigration issue become such a hot potato, we became more scrutinized about our labor.
Mm-hmm.
There's not enough legal labor in the U.S. to harvest any kind of vegetable, fruit. I don't care what it is. When one of the people that were running for Congress came to the farm, I offered him $1,000 for every person that he could bring that would be legal, that would do this work at even a reasonable wage. And I'm very secure in making that offer because they're not there. This is a very entry-level position job, and yet there is not legal people. And I'm tired of feeling like a criminal trying to harvest my crop so that Americans can enjoy a good chili relleno.
Ed, as you know, some people would listen to that and say, you're the problem. If you didn't hire those people, if you offered higher salaries, Americans would do this job. If you didn't hire those people, there wouldn't be the demand. People wouldn't be walking across the desert, and Olivia might be alive.
You know, my answer to that, Neil, is that I think we could offer $50 an hour, and I don't think we could get enough people. We're talking about hard labor.
Have you tried that, $50 an hour?
I've never honestly tried 50. But we have offered all kinds of different incentives and things. And, Neil, we pay by the contract. But you get paid for a 22-pound bucket of chili to harvest that. We've tried all sorts of different ways. And the truth is, it's just backbreaking hard work. And, you know, I hate to say that Americans don't want to do that, but it's just the truth.
Mm-hmm. And so are you afraid that at some point somebody's going to crack down on you and that you would be fined or charged with a crime?
Neil, I made your staff promise that they would visit me in jail.
And we'll bring you a nice chili relleno, too.
I would appreciate that. You know, Neil, yes, we've lived this for a long time, ever since the Immigration Act of 1986. Before 1986, I'm a native Arizona. Mm-hmm. This is my 36th chili crop. We've been around immigrants all of our lives. I speak fairly fluent Spanish, if you forgive me a little with my
accent,
et cetera. But we've been with this all of our lives. And as after the Immigration Act of 86, we became more nervous because obviously we became responsible. And it's a very fine line because if we look too hard, if we discriminate, mm-hmm. then we're discriminating by color of skin. On the other hand, Neil, I am not going to lie to this nation. We pretty well have an idea who's legal and who's not. But it cost us about, in my area, it cost us about $2,500 an acre of inputs into a chili crop. Once, and I borrow that money to grow that crop. This year, I did not plant my crop of chili. I do my genetic work, and I have that because I'm machine harvesting that. But the green, we're not to machine harvest yet. We're working hard on it, but we're not there. So I dropped my green for one reason. I don't want to go to jail for harvesting my crop. To me, that is just, it goes against every ounce of what is American, because America was built on agriculture. And so I've been really, literally afraid to plant my crop. And I provide seed for this industry, Neil. And many of my growers have quit or cut their acres way down. The onion industry, the same way. Greeley, Colorado, the onion industry is leading.
So you think you're just speaking the plain truth, that everybody does this?
Neil, I know. I sell seed to Florida growers. They use Haitians. The California growers use the same type we do. Mm-hmm. The New Mexico growers the same way. Any vegetable, any fruit in the U.S. is harvested pretty much by illegal labor. And the H2 program that we have is just so cumbersome for agriculture, it does not fit our needs.
Hmm. Let's see if we get another caller on the line. This is Michael. Michael's calling us from Flagstaff, Arizona.
Hi, thanks, Neil, for taking my call.
Sure.
I am a third-generation Mexican. My grandparents worked as liaisons for the farmers back in the 50s. Back then, they used to put camps up for everybody, and everyone was housed, and the families and all the workers were housed in these little camps. Mm-hmm. My grandfather actually lived there with my mother and all my family there. It was a completely different story back then than it is now. I am also a restaurant manager at a restaurant here. I have my chef is an immigrant. Well, most of my kitchen is an immigrant here, and a lot of our kitchens here in Flagstaff are immigrants. We hear rumors all the time about getting immigration coming in to take out our people, and you know, it's scary to get that because in the restaurants it's exactly the same as well as in what the gentleman with the chili farmers say, that everything, you know, we're functionless without these people. We really are, because they do the work that Americans don't want to do, and it's simple as that.
Mm-hmm. So you can't function without them, and again, I have to ask you the same question that I asked Ed Curry. Have you tried paying more?
We try to pay more. It's also quality of work is not the same. They have there's a genuine love of being here and working, getting a hard day's work, and Americans don't, they take advantage of that. Mm.
Thanks, Michael, for the call. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Have a good
day. Let's get another question from the audience here in Tucson.
Yes, my name's Hector McKenna, and I'm not against amnesty. I'm not against immigration reform, but I have five sons that are with Homeland Security, agents with Homeland Security.
Yes.
And they say that our government is not giving the real truth to the people of the United States as far as the dangers of opening amnesty reform. If these people that want to come across want to work, they wouldn't have no problem going and registering to work. But he says the majority of people that they catch now is illegals that are either trafficking in drugs or have ulterior motives to come to the United States.
Ulterior motives? Like what?
Well, like bringing down the United States.
Uh-huh.
In other words, my son has already, my oldest boy, has taken already from here, from the United States, four known or suspected terrorists to India, two to Africa. Now, those six could be the same thing that the Twin Towers had. So we have to be aware of the fact that if the people that want to come to live here and be United States citizens wouldn't have a problem trying to get legal papers. That's all. Thank you.
Thanks very much for that. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line from here in, let's see if, there we go. Jack is on the line. Jack with us from Illinois.
Yeah, I'm a Midwest farmer that really can speak to the same concerns as the other farmers. The difference between us and most farms is we're a small family farm. So we're not in a position to do the H2 program. We're not in a position to put up housing for groups and groups. And our pay is better than many of the rates around locally. The difference is we're a seasonal business. So after 6 months or 9 months, there's really nothing to do. And for people to go home and take care of their families and then live in a good way in their place is really what we've been providing. And I know that it's difficult to find people who can do that and be happy there.
Jack, I don't know what kind of crop you grow there in Illinois, but do you agree with Ed Curry that you can't function without illegal workers?
There's some that do, and they're usually done through interns, or it's a very small operation. But in our case, to have any product at all, we're right now facing a shortage because of the enforcement. This week I was expecting seven guys to show, and if they don't, you know, it's going to directly impact our crops this year, plus the people in Chicagoland are going to notice that they're not going to have stuff at farmers markets that they normally expect because they're just too labor-intensive to pick. And if we can pick five items a day and we need another 10 people to do that, you know, they're just going to get the short end of the stick. It's the consumers that'll see the shortage.
Jack, thanks very much for the call. And Ed Curry, at least that vote suggests that you may be right.
Well, I believe we are. I really feel like that the whole message here is that do we want to send more industries out of America? Because that's what's fixing to happen. With the increased enforcement, without a good guest worker program, we're lost. That $2,500 an acre that I'm talking about input in Chile, I've got to get that back or I can't pay the bank. I'm out of business quickly. We're dealing in millions anymore, not small change. So it puts farmers at a real disadvantage. So my cry is to our lawmakers is we need way more than 400,000 people, which is listed in that bill right now. We need that so desperately, and we need it now.
Ed Curry, thanks very much for being with us. Curry Farms is in Pierce, Arizona, and he was with us here in the panel. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. It's often said undocumented workers receive benefits they don't pay for. That's not always the case. Tony Campos is president of Campos Enterprises. It's a tax preparation services that specializes in Spanish-speaking clients. We had hoped that he would be able to join us on the panel here today, but it's tax season. Try to get an accountant to step out of the office.
He joins us now by phone from Phoenix. Tony, nice to have you on the program today.
Thanks.
And I know you see a lot of illegal workers filing taxes. Why do they do that, and has there been an increase?
There has been a steady increase, and I think the reason they're doing it is because immigration, whenever they try to get citizenship or apply for it, that's what they ask them for copies of their tax returns. So I have clients who come and do prior year taxes. I've done even 10 years worth of taxes for one client.
So this is part of they think of a process of they hope, legalization.
Right, right. And also for, purposes of buying a home, a lot of people are trying to become homeowners, and, you know, banks, they'll ask you for your tax returns as well.
How do you file a tax return without a tax ID number?
You can't. You have to apply for it.
And aren't they afraid at that point that they're going to be identified as illegal aliens and arrested and deported?
They have their concerns. But that's what these numbers were made up for people who don't qualify for Social Security numbers. And these people are made aware by us that, you know, filing a tax return is a duty of a citizen. You have to report your income, and they want to comply with the law.
And they want to comply with the law. And of course, if they're earning a salary someplace, taxes are being taken out of their wages, correct?
Yes. Yes, they have their taxes withheld just like any other employee.
And so in this case, are they applying, would they qualify to get a rebate?
You mean a refund?
A refund, yes.
Some taxpayers do get refunds, and a lot of them, they end up having to pay just like anybody else.
Huh. Does it actually help them in the process of legalization that they have these tax papers?
Well, I'm in the tax industry, so I don't really know much about the immigration process. And I wouldn't be able to, you know, talk about that.
So it might or it might not. Obviously, it does help them to get houses and other things.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a document that banks and immigration ask them for. So it obviously does help.
So in a way, as far as you know, does it balance out? Do they pay taxes in return for services?
Yeah, I mean, you could say it that way. A lot of times they do get refunds too, though, you know what I mean? And they're just pretty much trying to comply with the law. It's rare that somebody comes and tells me, hey, I need paper, I need to file taxes because of immigration. I get more people just wanting to comply with the law.
Hmm. Tony Campos, thanks very much. Appreciate your time.
All right, thank you.
No, it's your busy season. Tony Campos is president of Campos Enterprises with us today by phone in Phoenix. And Claudine LaMonica, we just have a couple of seconds left, but this issue seems to grip this community.
Oh, sure, because if you've heard today, I mean, we live it. And, you know, we're the number one entry point for illegal immigration. More than half the apprehensions last year were in Arizona, more than 500,000 people. So it's a huge issue here. And 10% of our workforce is estimated to be illegal, again, the highest in the nation.
Claudine LaMonica, we thank you for your time today. We appreciate it. Claudine LaMonica, a immigration reporter for the Tucson Citizen. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.